Becky Buller is a name that should be very familiar to you. Multi-award winning singer, instrumentalist, songwriter. She released a new album called Crepe Paper Heart. We're going to talk to Becky at length in the second hour about that album. It features, of course, the Becky Buller Band and a lot of great guests. Becky and I get into a lot of detail about the album, how it came about. You may know some of the songs. They've been kind of released as a setup to this grand release of Crepe Paper Heart on Dark Shadows Recording. You may have heard Calamity Jane. You may have heard Speaking to That Mountain. They're all included on this with a lot of great new songs and great new guest artists. You're going to like this. Becky's been a guest on the show many times. It's always a wonderful joy. Now she has this brand new album, Crepe Paper Heart, to discuss. Always happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, Becky Buller. How are you, Becky?
I'm great, Steve. Thank you for having me back so soon.
So soon?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was last year. I think the last time. But now you, yeah, I think it was. I think it was last summer.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
time
yeah.
It's flying.
It is. And you have a daughter who has a fifth birthday coming up. So that kind of blows my mind because I think I've known you maybe that long.
Yeah, probably, because she was just a little bitty thing when I came on the board.
Yeah, yeah.
The IBMA.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're talking about IBMA. I cycle out this year, by the way. I get paroled in September.
And that, well, I did. They might do like they.
No. You were important. I'm not. I'm just kind of like a placeholder. So I did my year of an interim term, and then I did a 3-year term, and then I'm going to be done. That was fun.
Thank you for your service to
the
greater bluegrass world through serving on the IBMA board.
It's amazing. It's amazing bunch of stuff. Well, that's all good to talk about. What we really want to talk about is I have a brand new album coming out from you, Crepe Paper Heart.
Yes.
And that's on Dark Shadow Records from our good friend Stephen Mogin.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, Becky. We were talking the other day. You kind of said, "Which one do you like? Which song do you like better?"
Yeah.
And I do this often. I'll listen to it, and every time I listen to something, I'll find a new favorite one.
That's good.
It is good. So it means there's just different things to it. But I think since we were just talking off the air about the Fairfield Four, we'll get to that one in a minute because it's lower down. But I don't know how you record. You do a song on here with the Fairfield Four. Before we get to the tune, which we'll talk about in a second, how do you record with them and then not like the rest of the day sing that particular call? I mean that verse back again. I listen to it, and all the rest of the day I'm listening to that in my head. I'm singing as deep as I can. You know, written in the back of the book. In the back of the book. I drive around doing that.
The way we remedied that was we recorded another one.
Oh.
that's for something else. So hopefully we can talk about that when it comes. Comes to fruition. But yeah. Oh my gosh, what an amazing experience. Hopefully I can get through this part of our conversation without crying, because every time I think about it, I start crying. It was so fun. And I became aware of the Fairfield Four through their collaborations with the Nashville Bluegrass in the 1990s.
It was Home of the Blues.
Roll Jordan. I mean, they did several things together last month of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, whenever
I play a cut, I always play Roll Jordan. I always play that introduction by Isaac Freeman.
Yeah.
There's a little tune we like to play called Roll Jordan. And then it's like, my God, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be doing that. I don't do impersonations. I don't mean to do that, except I just listen to.
It's so great, though.
It's very infectious. You have, on this album, you have, of course, the band, the Becky Buller Band.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They played most of the record, and it's past and present members, so. It's just some great, great characters and all good friends.
And you have a lot of great guests, Sam Bush, Rhonda Vincent, Claire Lynch, the Fairfield Four we were just talking about, Erin Youngberg, we'll talk about when we get to her song, Frank Sullivan, Brandon Bostic, Rob Ikes. This is like an all-star plus the B3 band.
Yeah. And then Stephen and Yana.
That's right.
They're on the bonus track with
you. That's right.
Which you've been playing. Thank you.
I have been playing, and I'm going to get an update on the status of that when we get to that, Phoenix Arise. The very first song, Another Love Gone Wrong, has the lyric that is the title of the album, Crepe Paper Heart. Now, there's some tearjerkers on here, Becky.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's an up-tempo song, but it's not a happy song.
No, not really.
Mm-mm.
Oh, with a title like that.
No. No. I have a note here about it. It's just about heartbreak. I kind of scribble some notes to myself, but it's, mm-hmm. you know, something, that's the title, Another Love Gone Wrong.
Yeah.
There's no way to make that a happy thing.
No, not really, but it's really fast.
It is. Oh, it's a great up. Yeah. The tempo is very quick, and you have to really listen to the words to realize that it's, you know, that it's not just another toe-tapping tune from a bluegrass band. Right. It's a sad. You have some beautiful, and not just sad, but you have some beautiful songs on the absolute. Like we were talking about Maybe, right before we went on the air, just absolutely gorgeous. Everything about it is, and
it's sad.
Oh yeah,
very wistful.
It's very wistful. Thing. You have a lot of sad. You have a lot of the very second. If we skip over the sadness. Bitter Springs to Big Trees. Now, that's from Exodus, correct?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay. Fill the people in a little bit on that.
Sure. It's from a story in Exodus where the Israelites have just come through the Red Sea, miraculously been rescued by God, and their enemies have been destroyed behind them, and they're 3 days into their travel, and they can't find water. And there's 2 million of them, and it's starting to get really bad. They're in the desert. And they start gnashing their teeth and saying, we'd be better off in Egypt. And so the song was actually inspired by a sermon from my pastor, Dr. Brenton Cox, at First Baptist Church in Manchester, Tennessee. And he was using that as an illustration for how in life we'll go through seasons where we can really feel God moving and we can really see what he's doing. And there's just lots of blessings and it's just all right there in front of us. And it's all very real, but then there are those times where we're going through a desert and we have to hold on to those memories of what God has rescued us from, what he's done for us, to until we can see the blessings again, until we get through that desert and until we catch up, our feelings catch up with what we know to be true about God and his character and what he's promised us, because he always keeps his promises. And that's what the chorus is about, is, you know, getting through that desert, praying through the desert,
mm-hmm.
and getting to the big trees, getting to Elim, which is, Elim means big trees. So that's where the Israelites found water and found shade.
Well, and big trees would kind of imply there's a water source that's working.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And Frank Sullivan's on that tune, is that right?
Yeah. Oh, I love his voice. I love what he and Dirty Kitchen are doing. Great stuff, and it was just a thrill that he was willing to be on that cut.
Arthur, there's so many great bands, and you mentioned Frank and Dirty Kitchen, and you watch them on stage, and you just think, and it's Mike Mumford and, Chris, is it Chris Bouquet? I think, yeah, Chris is still playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, Chris Bouquet.
And they're just so much fun to watch, and you just think, well, where does Frank want to take this tune?
And the bassman's name is escaping me right now.
Yeah,
I'm
me
sorry.
Too.
I know him too.
Yeah, I was going to avoid that, but now we both sound like we don't know, and we don't. But that's okay.
We're just being real.
That's right. Well, that's neat. Yeah. Had you ever worked with Frank before?
No, not like this. I mean, well, he and I wrote a song together. It was last year, last winter, and hopefully it's going to make it to one of their records. I know they were talking about it, but I don't know if it made it or not. You know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
You never know what's going to make the record until you have the record in your hand and there it is. So, I've enjoyed that. And then getting to do some festivals with them. You know, we're on the same shows.
Oh yeah, sure. That's
with
great.
Them a little bit, and it's just fun. They're so fun and they're so talented, and it's just so much energy in their stage show.
The next tune after that John D. Champion, now that's a real, based on a real story, is it not?
It is, yeah. John D. was from down around Raleigh, North Carolina, and I wrote this song with Linda Wittig-Dossing, and she's from Raleigh, and great songwriter, and she had a band called Kicking Grass, and then another duo gig with it was called Linda and Patty. And with Patty Hopkins, fiddle player and great singer, and but she's a mama at the moment. That's consuming most of her time.
How could that be? Now, how could that be, Becky? How could you be a mother and then lose time in the process?
Okay. Well, she's got two.
Oh, my God.
A little easier with one, but when Ella came along, that was we had to change gears for a little bit. But I know she's still doing some riding. I wish we lived closer so we could do more riding and our gals could get together and play. But I'm all the way over here in Manchester, Tennessee. But anyway, Linda's father-in-law told us the story of John Dee, and Harry Dawson is a great storyteller, so we had to really separate the fact from the fiction figure out what was true and what wasn't. And we did find out some about John Dee online. We found some records about him, and he was a test pilot, but after the war, he went back home. He went back to farming, and that's what he did for the rest of his life, which I found very interesting because a lot of those guys became commercial pilots and, you know, or stayed in the military flying or, but he went back to farming.
Do you happen to know? And so someone, Mr. Dawson tells you a story. How do you wind up picking topics like that? That's always an amazing thing to me.
Linda and I were planning on doing some writing and she said, "Hey, Harry told me this story. It's about this guy named John Dee Champion. And with a name like that, he needs a song about it."
Yeah, that's true. He's already got the name. He's already got the perfect name.
Yeah, it was the name that caught our fancy. And so we, just wrote this song. And I think it's probably one of the happier songs on the record, isn't it? There is a bunch of sad songs.
There's some sad songs in here, Becky. And I'm going to specifically skip for the moment Heart of the House. Because we're going to regain ourselves. We're going to come back to that. But I do want to mention, and that's a beautiful, by the way, you kind of borrow some woo-woos from Bill Monroe on that one a little bit.
A little
bit of the wind blowing through the pines.
Right, yeah.
But Speaking to That Mountain is now on this release. That's one that we've had and played. And
that was our first official single from the record. Of course, Phoenix Arise was a special project.
Yeah.
And it appears on this album as a bonus track, and that, it did come out first. But Speaking to That Mountain was our first song to come out from the main body of the record. And it's a gospel tune that I wrote with Jeff Hyde, who's part of Eric Church's road band. Jeff has helped Eric write Springsteen and Record Year, for those of you that might follow mainstream country music. Those songs have done really well for those guys. But Jeff is a real strong Christian and great guy, great songwriter, really fun to get to write with him. He went to South Plains College in Loveland, Texas. Alan Mundy.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Alan. And, wow.
You know, played some bluegrass. Mostly he's a country guy, but he played some bluegrass too. And I used to go to church with he and his wife in Murfreesboro when I was living up that way. So that's how we met. And I'm grateful that I get to write with him every so often. And this is actually, I think, might be the first song we ever wrote together. So, and that was a long time ago, so I'm so glad it's seen the light of day, finally.
Well, you mean on a CD, it's seen plenty of daylight just as a single.
As a single.
Yeah, it's been out there, and even as a video, a nice video that,
yes,
that was
my very first music video ever. Yeah. It was really fun to get all kind of glammed up and do that.
And the song really is a testament to faith as far as you're speaking to the mountain because you're I'm losing how to describe what you're really the point you're really making about it, but I hear it every time I play it that it's almost like your faith is it bigger than the mountain or more? Help me explain that.
Well, it's just saying that we've got this problem and I'm speaking to it and I'm telling it to move.
Yeah,
and I have faith.
That's right.
I have faith that God could move it.
Yeah.
If that's his will, but he may want to move me around the mountain or over the mountain or under the mountain. You know, but I have faith that something is going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good. It might not look good right now, but it's going to be good.
It's one of my favorites. And I've played it for so long, but also Calamity Jane now has found its way onto a CD.
Yes.
And that's a really neat song.
Thank you. That was so fun to get to write an outlaw song with Tim Stafford of Blue Highway, because I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I would even venture to say that he kind of taught me how to write. I mean, I've been a fan of.
Did he really?
Well, not personally, but just like listening to Blue Highway records and dissecting his songs, and because I just love the way he writes, and so I've studied him. You know, his work for a very long time, and I'm just a huge fan, and to get to write with him is just you know, I have to like squash down 16-year-old me that's going, oh my gosh,
he's a very thought. He puts a lot of thought into what he does.
Yes.
And that's why whenever Tim is on the show, I've often made it two-parters because I do get into things that interest me, and Tim has answers for every little bit of every little nugget of everything that he's written and why he's done it.
Yeah. Amazing guy and just amazing work. And he's known for his outlaw songs, at least to me anyway.
I see now. Okay. You specifically mean outlaw, like Calamity Jane.
He's written lots of outlaw songs. Wild Bill.
That's true.
Let's see. The Rounder. I think it was called The Rounder from Wind to the West. The guy that rode with Jesse James, he robbed the Glendale train.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah, and so I told my husband, I'd like to write an outlaw song with Tim Stafford. I think that would be so cool. And Jeff said, well, how about Calamity Jane? And then he got me the Doris Day movie. As inspiration.
Did you have to watch it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It was good.
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm just saying how much deep research do you do? We're going to write a song, but first, watch these movies.
Well, honestly, actually, I watched the movie, which, of course, you know, Hollywood musical. That didn't help a whole lot, but it still was fun. And then I did read at least one book. It's been a while ago, so I've lost track of things. But I do remember reading a book about Calamity Jane. And it's true, her legend did her in. She became the character that she was telling everybody that she was. I mean, she kind of was that character, but then she kind of bought into the whole lie, and then it killed her.
Well, you have, and you're joined in vocals by
Rhonda Vincent, the Queen of Bluegrass.
Oh man, it's a gorgeous. It's one of my favorite because of the singing, but I just like the way it. I play it. I probably play it every other program. I really like it.
Thank you.
Popping up on the charts a lot too, so you must know.
Yes.
That, yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much.
And then we'll get to Phoenix Arise before we're finished here. But right before Calamity Jane, we're talking about Eric Youngberg. Mm-hmm. Youngberg, maybe it's just I just wrote down beautiful as I'm making it just beautiful. I didn't know what else to write. I take a little notes as I write the songs, and I just wrote down beautiful. That's all I could say about it.
Yeah, thank you. So this is a pretty old song. I don't even remember when I wrote it, but it's been a long time ago. I wrote it with Bobby Starnes, and Bobby writes with Tim Stafford a lot. And Claire Lynch has recorded Bobby's songs. Lots of people have. And it was, of course, a great time to write with him. He lives out in East Tennessee. And as I was pulling into his driveway, I was listening to some 70s easy listening stuff. And as I'm singing this song, I hear Karen Carpenter in my head. And I wish I'd have had a chance to pitch it to her. What a gorgeous voice.
Well, and, Bert Bacharach said she had the most perfect natural singing voice he'd ever heard.
Yeah.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah, definitely. And then, and speaking of great voices, of course, Erin Youngberg is in harmony with me on this, and she's a true alto.
Beautiful.
She plays bass and is one of the lead singers for Fenders and Youngberg, and they also go by FY5. They're out of Colorado, the Boulder area, and Mike Fenders, their guitar player, who has been, I think he might now be on the IBMA Songwriter Committee, or at least he was for a little bit.
Okay.
But he's a great songwriter, very unique sense of timing, very smart, funny lyrics, good stuff. Not all of it's funny, but, you know.
Clever.
Clever. Mm-hmm. And he paints a great picture, so definitely check out some of their work. They've got a new album coming out. But yes, I thought her voice was just the perfect touch.
Well, I thank you for that. I always like to learn a little bit, and we talked before we went on the air about Erin, so you've helped the whole audience. You certainly helped me, and maybe helped the audience also shed light on some new people. Maybe they haven't heard, maybe they have. I had not.
We aim to please.
There you go.
We help where we can.
You mentioned Claire Lynch earlier, having written some songs, and she's on a song with you. She Loves Sunflowers, which is just one of those ones that kind of, it just gives you a big smile, but you wait for it. You wait for it. Well, it is sad, but no, but it is.
It is a sad album.
It is, I know, but it's not as sad as some of the sad ones, because on this one, there you wait for the close to the end where, you know, I don't want to ruin, well, it's not like a movie, it's not like I'm giving away, you know, movie
spoiler
ending.
Alert.
Not a spoiler alert, but there's sunflowers and there's a sister involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is from, is based on another true story from the family of some dear friends of mine out in Southwest Virginia, Randall and Arlene Brooks. And I met them when I came down to school in East Tennessee State, and they kind of adopted me. And I would go spend weekends with them, go to church with them. And I still call them, like, I call Arlene my Virginia mama. And they were just out here over Christmas, and Romy calls them Grandpa and Granny Brooks, you know.
Oh, cool.
Just love them so much. But they lost their youngest daughter, just an accident. It was very unexpectedly. Mm. And right before I came down to school, I think I met them it was about 6 months after Tammy passed away, and apparently she had kind of reddish hair too,
okay.
Yeah, and so anyway, fast forward to
for the listening audience, Becky kind of has reddish hair.
I kind of do, yeah. Curly red hair.
Yeah.
Fast forward several years, and one of their other daughters, Carmen, bought some land and was thinking about moving away from the family cove. They live up in a holler there, just on the north side of Bristol, Virginia, just right up there on just off 81. And they all have houses just right there in the same little holler. And Carmen bought some land up the road, and she wasn't sure, you know, that maybe this wasn't the best idea, or I don't know, maybe I shouldn't move up there, maybe we shouldn't do this. And then she was out there walking on the land, and she saw some sunflowers.
Yeah.
And she said, "That's Tammy telling me it's okay."
Isn't that something?
Tammy loved sunflowers. So
yep.
I was like, "That's so."
There it is. There it is.
Yeah, and having Claire on there was just perfect. We were talking about Wistful before with, I don't know, maybe Wistful is not the right word for this song, but...
To me, it's an uplifting song, even though it's sad to me, but, you know, when you reach that point when you realize that it's, let's say, Tammy or whoever, that someone was sending you a message, and God's overlooking you and she's overlooking you at the same time. Yeah, I just thought it was uplifting. It's sad,
Claire's
Becky. I'm not gonna come off the fact that it's sad, but I think it has a good, I think it has a good uplifting message if you last till the end of it.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking of sad, Heart of the House.
Oh yeah.
That's just, you know.
Yeah.
That's just dismal, sad, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful song, but jeepers criminy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's bluegrass, and bluegrass is...
I know, but
Ned always says,
go ahead.
You know, traditional happy-sounding melodies with miserable, depressing
music. You're talking about Ned Lubrecki, one of my favorite people in the world, and he's your
banjo
player.
Yeah, my band. I'm so grateful to work with Ned Lubrecki. He's a treasure.
But that song, there's not a happy, there's not an uplifting ending, and it's just the heart of the house is I think is the wife, and she's not there anymore. So you have a kitchen with drawn shades, and it's that's not ever going to get any better in that song.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
I wrote that one with Sarah Majors from Nashville here, and she was. It was actually her idea. We got together that day to write, and she was thinking about her brother, and at that point he hadn't married, and she just felt so bad for him. He was lonesome, you know, and I was thinking of my father-in-law because I didn't get to meet my mother-in-law. She passed away. She actually, it was complications with diabetes.
Mm.
I don't know, a year or two before my husband and I met, but I know she was amazing. Because my husband and my sister-in-law are just incredible people, and I know them. I'm seeing her reflection in them, and my father-in-law, a great guy. But he's chosen not to remarry, and he's over there at the house by himself, and it's lonesome for him. I know it is, and he's actually over here visiting us right now. Mm-hmm. So up there with Jeff. talking history.
Well, I have written underneath that linoleum floor, and then I have woo, and then I have sad, sad, sad. Now, the woo part is the vocal part, and I write it out as woo. It's not really a woo, but...
Yes, it's woo-hoo.
Yeah, that's right. It's the wind in the pines. I mean, that's what
exactly.
I thought.
and then Professor Dan Boner is singing with me on that. He's playing mandolin on the record. He's actually the guitar player in our band now.
Yeah.
But when we got... this album has been about 3 years in the making, and we've had some changes since we got these tracks cut, and so he's playing mandolin on it, but he just sings the fire out of it.
It's an absolute, it's a beautiful, 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 but it's mournful.
It is.
It's very mournful. Claire, the tune after that, Care, there's no L in it.
Care Paravel. Now that's happy.
It is happy, and you're just showing off on that one.
That's because there's no lyrics.
That's right. Well, you're just showing off on that one.
Yeah.
You're just burning up the fiddle.
Name this one after the castle in the Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, jeez.
The golden castle by the sea.
That escaped me.
The High King Peter was in, and his brother and sisters were... kings and queens over Narnia.
Well, that's an instrumental. There's no words in that. You're right. That's the only instrumental on the album, I believe.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that everybody got a chance to shine. This is Ned Liberecki, of course, on the banjo. Brandon Bostic was with us for a couple of years on guitar. He's now playing with Patti Loveless. He's on there. And then Professor Dan is on the mandolin. And who am I missing? I feel like I'm missing somebody. Oh, well, me. I'm on there. Oh, Daniel Harden. We call him the Hulk. Daniel is the Hulk Harden. He's a big Hulk of a guy.
He was a big guy.
And he smashes the bass. But he got a solo on this one, too, and he just crushes it. And I'm so glad because I wrote this tune a long time ago when we were both playing for Val, and he just always remembered this tune. And anytime I'd see him, and he'd say, hey, play that lick. And so I'm just so glad that I finally got to record it, and that Daniel is playing the bass on it, and that we got to feature him like we did on this one. Hope you'll enjoy it.
The Rebel in the Rose is your guest on that is Sam Bush. Is that you're playing Clawhammer, correct?
I am. Just me and Sam, Clawhammer, mandolin, and two voices.
Is that based on a real story? I mean, it seems to be Civil War period New Orleans. That's what I keep hearing through the without direct reference to. But is that just
Actually, Tony Rackley and I wrote that song together, and of course, Tony's big time involved in IBMA and the songwriter committee stuff, and he called me up and he said, hey, I just saw this boat, and the name of it's The Rebel in the Rose. We should write a song about it. I'm like, okay, and I was out walking, actually, when he called me, and so I walked around the block, and then I called him back. I was like, here, what do you think of this? And I sang him a first verse. He's like, yeah, okay. And we got together on Skype and we finished the whole thing, and it's we really made it up. But I kind of had in mind Jeff's great great grandpa who fought at Shiloh and was wounded and carried a bullet in his arm for the rest of his life.
Yeah, because there's an injury. Yeah, there's a fellow that gets injured in this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I love there's sadness in this. It's about broken people, broken in body and mind, and spirit, and yet there's a message of hope and healing in it, in the chorus. And I actually pitched this one to another artist, somebody that I really admire, and I thought it was that they were going to cut it, and they called me back and said, you know, the band doesn't like the chorus. Can we cut out the chorus? And I was torn because I really wanted these folks to cut this song, but I was like, the chorus is my favorite part.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I'll pat. Thank you, but no, I like the chorus. But then I got to record it myself. It was just fine too.
Yeah, I have some of my notes. I've got Clawhammer, Sam Bush. Mm-hmm. I've got the Civil War references, and then I have Hope underlined and injured. This is how sparse my notes are, but it helps me give a place to go to, so that makes more sense. So now that you've explained it. Written in the back of the book, we talked about a little bit with the Fairfield Four. You have to stand up when you're listening to that song. You just do. Even if I'm driving. Even if I'm driving, I have to stand up.
Nice. Did you have to clap along?
Yeah, I let go of the wheel.
Okay. All right.
I sing along. I will sing. I try. And as long as it's on, I sound just like that guy. But when he's not there, I'm not quite that deep of a voice.
Joe, Oh man, it was an amazing day in the studio. We had church.
Oh, really?
It was great. And they before they would agree to do the song, they wanted to hear it and see the lyrics, you know, make sure that it fit their message and what they wanted to be doing, which I, you know, totally respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so excited that they felt that it did and that they were willing to come in and record with me. And it was just fun hearing their stories. And like Joe, the bass singer, had a chance to go pro and during the Motown era.
Really?
Chose not to, yeah.
Becky, is this something that you wrote thinking about the Fairfield Four?
I did. Hmm. I did, yeah, because like I said before, I fell in love with their music, you know, through the Nashville Bluegrass Band, through Alan O'Brien's mm-hmm. love of this, you know, black gospel music.
Yeah.
And I've heard a little bit of like the Dixie Hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sister Rosetta Thorpe, just a little bit. You know, most of my exposure to that kind of music has been the Fairfield Four, and I have several of their records, and along with the stuff they did with the Nashville Bluegrass Band. I just love it. I love the beat. I love the soul.
How do you ever end it? I would say that when the tape runs out, but since it's digital, but how do you ever end that type of a song once you get started on it? How do you actually get to stop it? It seems to me it just goes on, chugs along by itself.
Right. Yeah. I just wanted it. And I wanted there to be more written in the back of the books in the middle. And Stephen's like, no. And of course, that's my producer, Stephen.
Yes, Stephen.
So it's good to have him there saying, no, and don't do that. Don't go there. No, that did not sound good. You can't do that. No.
Can't do it forever. You can't do a million of them. You can't do it forever. Well, then, so then the bonus track then, and we've had, and I've played, and a lot of people have played, Phoenix Arise, and even you recorded a nice clip for me that I would drop in every time I played it about the purpose of the song. And let me ask you about an update. Phoenix Arise, tell the story quickly, but I want to know an update of the community that was about.
Yeah, so Phoenix Arise is our bonus track on the album. It's the only one that I didn't write or co-write. And it was written by Mark Simos and Lisa Ashman. And we recorded it specifically to help the people of Medelia, Minnesota, which is in my home county of Watonwan County, Minnesota. It's where my dad works. It's about 10 miles from my hometown. My mom works very closely with the city of Medelia, and we were actually getting ready to do a show in my hometown when this fire happened in the downtown of Medelia, and it took out a whole city block.
It was in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. It was in the winter of 2016, and it was during the worst blizzard of the season, so several area fire departments responded, but they were hampered by the weather conditions and couldn't get in there. And before, you know, a whole city block was lost. Luckily, no one was hurt, but it took out several businesses. This is a town of 2,000 people, so it really hurt their downtown district. And it was just amazing how the county, which there's always been a rivalry in our county, especially between St. James, my hometown, and Medelia. But it was amazing how the
a rivalry for what?
Oh, you know, just normal football.
Okay, all right.
Everything. We got the county seat. They were supposed to have the county seat.
There you go. They'll never let that go. All right, okay, back to the story.
But they laid all that aside and came together to help the folks in Medelia, and the state, you know, came together to help them. And so we recorded this song, and we put it out there as a download for a donation of any amount at the MedeliaStrong.com website. And so we had it up there. It's now been taken down because we're putting the record out finally. Mm-hmm. But it was up there until we put the record out. And just thank everybody that donated to get that track and to help those folks. And they've been able to rebuild the businesses. Everybody's back in all the businesses are
okay.
Back in their back there on the main street in Medelia. And we actually were up there in October, and we played this live in the street with the businesses behind us, so you can see the rebuilding and how they're doing up there. And that's I'm not sure if I've got that on my website yet, but it is on my YouTube channel.
Okay.
If folks would like to look at it, it's just it should be right up there toward the top, and it's just the Becky Buller Band live in Medelia, Minnesota, singing Phoenix Arise.
Becky, you talked about some changes while this album was in the process. To make sure everybody knows the current makeup of the Becky Buller Band.
Sure. Currently, it's Ned Lubarecki on the banjo, Professor Dan Boner on the guitar, Nate Lee on the mandolin, and Dwayne Anderson on the bass.
Okay.
And then we have CJ Garskoff as our sound guy, who's also a talented musician in his own right. And we just have a lot of fun running up and down the road, playing music and shaking and howdying and all that good stuff.
It's a great, you know, here's something
I to do this.
Something I will say, Becky, and I've seen you a million times. I've talked to you a lot, and I've gotten to know you from the board. One of the benefits of being on the IBMA board, mm-hmm. people listening, is to get to meet people like Becky and all the people that work so hard over the years. But I can hear you smiling when you're singing, even on a record.
Even when I'm singing sad songs?
Yes, and I don't even mean laughing. I mean, I can hear the smile without a laugh involved when I hear you singing. You are so expressive in your vocals and you know that vocalist of the year, I guess, what was it, 2016?
Yeah.
Your vocals are so, and that I think is the key. You're not just singing words. And I don't mean that you're laughing at everything, but I know when you are. And you know, but you're so much expression in your voice as you put lyrics into the wind, into the song, into the music, that it's something I just smile when I listen to you. Even in the sad songs, when I hear you sing the sad ones, I even smile because I can hear in your voice the expression.
Well, I love that, because you know we're living in a kind of a rough time, and I feel like my job is to help take people's mind off of it for a little while and give them a respite, and I hope people leave our shows feeling rejuvenated and refreshed.
Well, I think they will. How do the folks leaving, when they're either coming or going, how do they get Great Paper Heart?
It's currently available for pre-order at iTunes and anywhere you do your musical shopping online, do your downloading. Mm-hmm. And you can also get it from Dark Shadow Recording. com. I've got a link on my website on the B3 Boutique online. you can find it, and it'll take you where you need to go there to get a copy of it. And just want to thank you for playing it. Thanks to folks for listening. I'm just grateful for every day I get to do this.
Do we want to put out a call for, I'm not allowed to do call to actions, but do we want to put out everybody look around for a certain sort of pinata in the next couple of weeks?
So when Steve called me, I was sitting there with my daughter. Romy's about to turn 5, and so she's decided that we're going to have a party. It's her first.
I shouldn't ask you to do this, but I think it's cute.
It's fine. I think it's funny. But we're going to have a party for her. She's going to have she only wants her girlfriends to come over, and she wants it to be a Nutcracker theme, because she's all about Maurice Sendak's Nutcracker that he did with the Seattle Ballet back in the early 80s. We have a video of that. She loves it, especially the Nightingale. Mm-hmm. But she's decided that she wants this Nutcracker-themed birthday party with a pinata. So.
Okay. Yeah, we'll put the word out.
She and I were trying to find a Nutcracker pinata online, and we're kind of coming up short. Now, we did find one on Etsy of the Rat King, but that was a little more than I wanted to spend.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I was suggesting several other things, but she wasn't going for it. She didn't like the sloth or the T-Rex or the I was looking for a moose pinata, but yeah, or unicorn. I was surprised she passed up the unicorn.
Oh, unicorn. That might be your fallback, but unicorn might be your safety position.
Maybe,
right. All right, Becky, I enjoy your music so much, and the band, everybody in the band, I just enjoy watching them, and thanks so much for your time. I know you're real busy, and I always take more time than I want to, but I just like talking to you, so that's the way it goes.
Oh, well, likewise. Thank you again for having me on. Thanks for spinning the record.
You're welcome. I'll see you down the road then.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.